Hello, Pacifica Radio Network. You're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil, heard on KPFK Safe Harbor, No Lies Radio, and WRFG on occasion so far. All Pacifica Network radio stations. Our audience is growing. That's because Cynthia's Midnight Oil is raw, uncut, community power for your eardrums. Cynthia's Midnight Oil is where I can tell you the truth. Like this. It seems that something untoward might have happened to real journalist Ben Swan because his social media, as he wrote, has, quote unquote, gone dark. At first, I didn't know what that meant. But when I went to his reality check, Facebook, or as my friend Lindsay says, fake spook page, I was given the message by Facebook that the account no longer exists. I was tipped off by what I'll call the Pizzagate online truth crew, who alerted me that Ben Swan had not been on the air at Atlanta CBS Channel 46 since he made his extremely popular but clearly not well received by the culprits in high places video on Pizzagate that aired on CBS in Atlanta. So now something has happened, but what? I can't tell you. And it seems that no one knows at this point. Swan did return to anchor after a brief hiatus, and he's now back at anchor without, though, his series, which is entitled Reality Check. That Reality Check series used to appear on CBS's 46, and also it was on social media. So now I don't know if the Reality Checks are going to continue to air on CBS or if they've been cut out for good or just what, but his Reality Checks on social media, well, he doesn't have any social media anymore. So this is a sad day when real journalism is quashed in favor of silence on issues that matter. Remember, Dr. King said, and I quote on this, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." It's true that our democracy, such as it is, also begins to end when the journalistic community and politicians are prohibited from discussing ways in which the democracy fails to function. Now, I have my own opinions about the ultimate unworkability of any indirect democracy, such as our republic, but that's a discussion for another show. Suffice it to say that it was over a decade ago, and I still can't believe that, when I queried Pentagon Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on why DynCorp continued to receive Pentagon contracts when it had been caught, along with the United Nations, trafficking in women and little girls for sex slavery. Unfortunately, DynCorp, through its successor companies, is still getting government contracts because all these bad actors do is just change their name and get back into the game. But because of the Hillary Clinton emails and, of course, WikiLeaks, we now know that there was a relationship between Hillary Clinton and the woman arrested by Haitian officials for trying to steal 30 Haitian kids. I watched in pure disgust as little Haitian kids were being trafficked out of Haiti by a group of so-called missionaries supposedly doing God's work. But in actuality, they were just stealing Haitian babies to feed into this human trafficking, sex slavery for perverts underworld. Who would have ever known that Hillary actually knew this slave trader without those emails and WikiLeaks? Incredibly, Hillary was concerned about Laura Silsby's well-being rather than that of the children. It's a sick world out there, but we can't give up. We have to keep up the good fight for what is right. In addition to the Ben Swan enigma, the White House finally posted the controversial quote-unquote Muslim travel ban on the whitehouse.gov media website. So we can all read it now and understand without the media propaganda exactly what the policy was based on the Obama era legislation, what the policy is, and make our own assessment of the presidential action. One of the most important lessons that we must learn is that we don't need Wolf Blitzer or Rachel Maddow, or even for that matter, Amy Goodman, to translate for us when we have the primary source right in front of us. If they're hooked into the massive foundation financial entanglements that dangle dollars into NGO or so-called charitable 501c3 organizations are just as bad, the corporate special interest media, then we don't need them to tell us what anyone said if we can listen to what they said ourselves and draw our own conclusions. As George Orwell said, the people will believe what the media tells them to believe. So one major lesson for us to learn in 2017 is that we don't need them anymore to tell us what we just heard. That's why here at Cynthia's Midnight Oil, you can count on me to go against the grain, always following the evidence to uncover the facts and expose the deceptions now proliferating around us. Therefore, I want you to consider this show as your liberated zone, where the shackles on your mind are the first to go. You might get shocked, maybe even outraged, but my hope is that you will not think about things in the same way, that you will have a disorienting dilemma that will cause you to completely rethink what you thought was conventional and what you consider to be wisdom. Remember, the great South African anti-apartheid leader Steve Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Take heed to me. Listen.
My fellow Americans, this week I nominated Neil Gorsuch for the United States Supreme Court. Judge Gorsuch is one of the most qualified people ever to be nominated for this post. He's a graduate of Columbia, Harvard, and Oxford. He's a man of principle. He has an impeccable resume. He's widely respected by everyone. And Judge Gorsuch's proven track record upholding the Constitution makes him the ideal person to fill the vacancy left by the late, great Antonin Scalia, a truly fabulous justice. 10 years ago, the Senate unanimously approved Judge Gorsuch's nomination to serve on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. I urge members of both parties to support Judge Gorsuch and, in so doing, to protect our laws and our freedoms. This week, we also took significant action to roll back the massive regulation that is devastating our economy and crippling American companies and jobs. That's why I've issued a new executive order to create a permanent structure of regulatory reduction. This order requires that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must, and I mean must, be eliminated. It's out of control. The January employment report shows that the private sector added 237,000 jobs last month. A lot of that has to do with the spirit our country now has. Job growth far surpassed expectations in January, and the labor force participation also grew, so you can be encouraged about the progress of our economy. It's going to be a whole new ballgame. But there is still much work to do, that I can tell you. Also this week, on the first day, Black History Month, I was pleased to host African-American leaders at the White House. We're determined to deliver more opportunity, jobs, and safety for the African-American citizens of our country. America can really never, ever rest until children of every color are fully included in the American dream. So important. I think probably one of my most and maybe my most important goal. It is our mutual duty and obligation to make sure this happens. At Dover Air Force Base on Wednesday, I joined the family of Chief Special Warfare Operator William Ryan Owens as our fallen hero was returned home, a great man. Chief Owens gave his life for his country and for our people. Our debt to him and his family, a beautiful family, is eternal. God has truly blessed this nation to have given us such a brave and selfless patriot as Ryan. We will never forget him. We will never, ever forget those who serve, believe me. And I will never forget that my responsibility is to keep you, the American people, safe and free. That's why last week I signed an executive order to help keep terrorists out of our country. The executive order establishes a process to develop new vetting and mechanisms to ensure those coming into America love and support our people, that they have good intentions. On every single front, we are working to deliver for American workers and American families. You, the law-abiding citizens of this country, are my total priority. Your safety, your jobs, and your wages guide our decisions. We are here to serve you, the great and loyal citizens of the United States of America. The forgotten men and women will never be forgotten again, because from now on, it's going to be America first. That's how I got elected. That's why you voted for me, and I will never forget it. God bless you, and God bless America.
Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns his back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl. Heaven help us all. Heaven help us all.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
Heaven help the man who gave that war gun. Heaven help the people with their backs against the wall. Heaven, heaven help us all.
Yep, that's right. Heaven, please help us all. Whoever would have thunk that I would be forced by the utter corruption of the Democratic Party to be where I am now politically. As I look at what's happening on the streets of our country today, I see people that I marched with under Presidents Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Bush W., and Obama. And I get that, because we still have a lot to march for. But just like those who marched at the Maidan in Kiev, who despised corrupt government and wanted change had their hopes for their country usurped by more nefarious moneyed characters who had already planned to use them and their hopes and their aspirations and their dreams to implement a U.S. deep state inspired regime change. And again and again, it happened. What we today call the quote unquote Arab Spring. But now what I see is consistent with what Dr. James Petras has written in his piece entitled Regime Change Comes Home. The CIA's overt threats against Trump. Petras, who inspired my dissertation topic, although he doesn't really know that, I guess he'll know it now when he listens to this broadcast, writes that the well-honed skills of the CIA at regime change overseas now are being applied at home to the USA itself. But this is not a new observation. Senator Frank Church, while investigating U.S. intelligence excesses of the 1960s that included what he called illegal and un-American, that Senator Church's quote, domestic activities, including murder, concluded that practices that the CIA used overseas were also used at home, much to the shame of the CIA and the presidents and the members of Congress who let it happen. Therefore, knowing what happened in Libya, Syria, Ukraine, and even before that in Haiti, I do see something happening in the U.S. exactly like what Petras observes. Petras blames the media for the success of this repeat of history. He writes, today, the distinction between overseas and domestic norms has been obliterated by the state and quasi-official mass media. The U.S. security apparatus is now active in manipulating the domestic democratic process of electing leaders and transitioning administrations. That's close quote. Petras adds that the actors in this regime change enterprise cross what he calls, quote, traditional ideological boundaries. Petras concludes that the, quote, worst catastrophe that could fall on the United States would be a conspiracy of leftist and rightist politicos, the corporate mass media, and the so-called progressive websites and pundits providing ideological cover for a CIA-orchestrated regime change. Now, this is Dr. Petras's words, but this is exactly as I see it. He's calling it as I see it as well. And even worse, according to Petras, here's another quote. A broad coalition has joined hands with the most violent and murderous organization, he's talking about the CIA here, guys, and imperial political leadership, he's talking about those neocon, neoliberal globalists, what I call the cabal, which views overtures to peace to be high treason because it limits their drive for world power and a U.S.-dominated global political order. Now, we also know that JFK, in his American University commencement address, used the word peace over 30 times in a speech that didn't last 30 minutes. And here Petras is making this observation that peace goes against a certain interest of political actors inside the U.S. I would agree with that and say that this is a faction of the U.S. deep state. Now, unfortunately, I believe Petras has hit the nail right on the head, except for one major aspect, and that is that the U.S. deep state is not monolithic, and therefore only one faction of it has turned inward to stop Trump, while the other faction of it supported Trump's election and supports Trump now. So, like Petras, I believe that innocent black, brown, and white activists are being swept up as pawns into a whirlwind not of their own making. The same goes for the staunch Trump supporters who don't maintain a proper intellectual distance so as to remain able to provide a proper critique of the Trump administration when necessary. And so we the people are being treated to an up-close view of the Clash of the Titans. As I have said before, and one day I will explain it all in depth, add to this factional infighting the concept of cliodynamics coupled with the Samson option as explained by investigative author Seymour Hersh, and I believe what we are witnessing is exactly that explosive mix, and it's come home. I believe the Samson option has been unleashed because one faction of the U.S. deep state, that's the Hillary faction, was on the verge of toppling the Trump faction. And the awakening of what has become that Trump faction has spawned all-out war that is now engulfing, confusing, and abusing political actors from across the entire political spectrum. Therefore, I chafe at what I see as my friends and people I know and people I support, organizations I support and have supported for a long time. First, I chafe when I see them in support of Hillary Clinton, and now still in support of that faction of the deep state responsible for the wholesale slaughter of millions of people by U.S. policies and the wholesale destruction of whole countries in its race to global Armageddon if it doesn't get its way. Therefore, I cringe when these people who supported Hillary are called, quote unquote, the left. They are not the left. And I shake my head while declaring I am the left. I keep telling myself that I am the left. I am the left. I am the left. And so let me stake my political activist manifesto. Let me state it. I'm against U.S. wars. I'm for peace. I'm against U.S. labor policy that disrespects the value of labor. I'm for policies that respect the dignity of work, including manual labor. I'm for civil rights, civil liberties, and human rights as outlined largely in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which affirms the aspirations and rights of individuals in society. I'm for the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I'm for justice. I'm for the national interest of the United States. and the global interests of nature and humanity. I'm for the struggles around the world of people to be recognized because all faces are important, and to be heard because all voices are important. I believe that truth is what underlies justice, and that justice underlies peace. I believe that peace based on justice affirms our dignity. I believe, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that we should work toward the elimination of militarism, materialism, and racism in our own lives and in the world. I believe, like Bobby Kennedy, that each and every one of us has a responsibility to work for justice, and in so doing, it is possible to wash down the mightiest walls of oppression. I believe that like them, they existed in their time, but now their good works belong to eternity. Therefore, I assert that what I see as an uprising by the masses led by those shadow money men who finance so-called color revolutions around the world, led by intellectuals in their hire, and who are upset because Hillary Clinton wasn't elected to the presidency, do not represent the left, but in reality are something else. Those in this leadership are not the left, but are the crypto left, the pseudo left, maybe the alt left, who have decided to take a hard anti-left political position. Mind you, I am definitely not talking about the people who are confused by what's going on underneath the carpet, as it were. As Mike Rupert used to say, there's something moving under the carpet. And are acting honestly. I'm not talking about them, but I am talking about charlatans like Chuck Schumer, who helped to orchestrate anti-Muslim violence by destroying Muslim-majority countries from Sudan to Somalia to Libya to Iraq, and then shed a fake tear on television for the innocent but weaponized refugees fleeing the very violence that Schumer has supported. Voila, an icon on the left. He is not the left. And those financing the street movements who sit in back rooms with Chuck Schumer, they're not the left either. So while Chuck Schumer, Robert Reich, Peter Krugman, and company, the rest of them, take ownership of the political and intellectual leadership of the left, following them is a trap for people like me. People on the left should follow principles and values, not people. And still, there hasn't been a war prosecuted by the U.S. in the last decade that Chuck Schumer and company has objected to. And they won't, because they have different values and different objectives. Therefore, if they are on the left, then I have to declare my independence from them once again, like I did 10 years ago in this speech when I declared my independence from the Democratic Party controlled U.S. torture and war crime state.
Thank you very much. Well, it seems that George Bush and the Democratic leaders were right. They confidently told us that only the Democrats would fund the surge, but that the Democrats would not stop action in Iran, too. Now we are not surprised when the unelected, illegitimate administration of George Bush ignores Secret Evidence Act and the Military Tribunals Act. Why is impeachment off the table? Our country is bankrupt, yet this institution, the Pentagon, has lost $2.3 trillion. I want that money back. For our veterans. The Democrats have become so timid they won't even repeal the Bush tax cuts as a strategy to deal with a bankrupt nation. Seems the story is the same, more money for war, but we can't feed the poor. It's hard to believe, but now the Democrats are full partners in George Bush's wars. And by complicit in war crimes, complicit in torture, complicit in crimes against humanity, complicit in crimes against the peace. The FBI spied on us, Condoleezza, Dick, and George lied to us. In 1957, Dr. King observed that both political parties have betrayed the cause of justice, and so it must be repeated today. Our beloved America is dividing again in two Americas. Our struggle is for nothing less than the soul of our country. We want an America that is respected in the commonwealth of man. We want our values to shine like a beacon around the world. As an American of conscience, I hereby declare my independence from every bomb dropped, every threat leveled, every civil liberties rolled back, every child killed, every veteran maimed, every man tortured. And I sadly declare my independence from the leaders who let it happen. We will not stop. We will win, and we will take our country back.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me, and I will never.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstores sell. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me.
Speaking of war crimes, President Trump joined the Nobel Peace Laureate as a war criminal when he approved bombing strikes against Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. And those bombing strikes ended up killing a U.S. military personnel and the sibling of an al-Awlaki kid killed in Yemen by President Obama. So although President Trump, as a candidate, spoke of ending quote-unquote regime change wars on day one of his administration, he shed regime change blood, sent U.S. soldiers into harm's way, killed innocents, and joined the legion of U.S. presidents who are war criminals. While there is some discussion about this particular set of strikes already being in the pipeline, the fact is that people were killed in Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. And this was approved by President Trump. Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change provides some commentary.
While the mainstream media talks about celebrities and inauguration crowds, things that have no relevancy or validity in our daily lives, I wanted to refocus everyone's attention on the most important thing, and that is American foreign policy and how many bombs are dropped in our name with our tax dollars in the Middle East, especially now under Donald Trump. We were getting initial reports here that the Secretary of Defense, Mad Dog Mathis, on his first day decided to blow up, according to some sources, 31 ISIS, supposedly ISIS, targets. Now, Glenn Greenwald is reporting that the first airstrikes were carried out under Trump were 25 in Syria, 6 in Iraq, and a drone strike in Yemen. Now, this is what we should be concerned about because the foreign policy initiatives by the West, by the Barack Obama administration in Yemen, have been awful and totally wrong in many essences, protecting Saudi Arabia and the conflict that they have with Yemen, which is largely irresponsible, supporting that human rights violating country and their war crimes that they have been committing in that country. But it's important to note, this is not an escalation because Barack Obama literally dropped a bomb every 20 minutes last year alone of his administration. So this is not increase of the airstrikes. We're just getting initial reports of how many are continuing, but it's also not clear whether these were actually planned by Donald Trump or ongoing operation that's just continued. Now, with these airstrikes, the Russians and the Kremlin are coming out and are saying, yeah, we did this together with the United States-led coalition in Syria. We have the Russian defense minister coming out in a statement Monday saying, quote, after conducting additional surveillance measures using drones and satellites, two Russian warplanes together with two coalition U.S. aircraft carried out airstrikes on terrorist targets, hitting several fuel depots as well as ammunition stores and terrorist positions. This is according to the Russian. The Pentagon is answering back and saying that this is rubbish and, quote, Russian propaganda. U.S. State Department spokesman Adrian Galloway told Sputnik that the Pentagon was not coordinating airstrikes with the Russian military in Syria, and the United States is denying that they have been working with Russia in order to defeat ISIS inside of Syria. Now, it's important to understand here, the White House under Donald Trump is open to cooperating militarily with Moscow, but it would be illegal under a provision that Barack Obama signed into the 2014 National Defense Authorization Act, which makes it illegal and would limit the Pentagon's ability to work with Russia. This is the same NDAA that legalized Barack Obama to indefinitely detain, arrest, and hold people in jail, American citizens in jail, without the due process of law. This is a very controversial NDAA, and in that provision, it says you cannot work together and cooperate with Russia as well. How will Donald Trump respond to this? Will they openly cooperate? It's very interesting seeing these two sides, Donald Trump and Russia and Vladimir Putin, who said that they would do this, now caught in a war of words against each other. But what's more interesting is the situation that developed in Yemen, whether it was a Donald Trump-led initiative, whether it was a continued operation of Barack Obama, whether it was Mad Dog Mathis, we do not know, but we will keep a close eye on this story because it's important to understand what countries are we bombing. A lot more important than the malarkey and bullcrap that you see on the mainstream media and even in some of the alternative media. So if this video resonated with you and it is important to you to understand American foreign policy, make sure to support us on wearechange.org/donate. Share this video, and of course, don't forget to subscribe. Click that bell button. We're going to have more important foreign policy news coming here your way on youtube.com/wearechange. I wanted to make this video specifically for Donald Trump supporters who care about ending radical Islamic terrorism. And I think this video could also provide some context to the people who are protesting Donald Trump right now. But please, whatever you do, watch all the facts presented to you in this video before leaving a comment and debate me on this important topic. Now, as we know, we are finding out that a U.S. commando died recently in Yemen over counterterrorism raids that took place in that country. Now, military officials have been planning this raid and debating it for months under Barack Obama's administration, but Barack Obama decided to leave this choice up to Trump to personally authorize or not. And Donald Trump did personally authorize this counterterrorism operation himself, continuing the failed foreign policy initiatives by Barack Obama. In the American mainstream media, we heard a lot about this U.S. serviceman that was killed, but we never heard about any civilian casualties. We never heard about any collateral damage.
And the military has been very quiet about this, but we're getting reports that 10 women and children were killed in this counterterrorism operation. One of them, an 8-year-old girl, the daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki. This is a sad and tragic death, which led this 8-year-old girl to be shot in the neck and bleed out until she died for over 2 hours. It's important for context to know that Anwar al-Awlaki's son was also assassinated and murdered, but by Barack Obama, and he was a 16-year-old normal American citizen from Colorado that Barack Obama and his drone program assassinated without the due process of law. And the only initial comments that we got from the Obama administration was when this very news organization had to hound down his spokesperson, Robert Gibbs. And the thing he said was, well, this 16-year-old American citizen from Colorado just should have had a better father before we decided we're going to kill him outside of the law. Now, it's not only grief that I'm feeling for and pain that I'm feeling for this 8-year-old girl and these innocent children that are caught up in this global war on terrorism. It's also the U.S. soldier that doesn't get to come back to his family, that a life of one of our own, one of our bravest, has been ended prematurely. And I have to ask the question, for what? Because let's look at Yemen. Why are we in Yemen? Can you give me an answer on that? I could walk on the street right now, and I bet no American citizen, maybe some, very few, would actually even understand what's happening in Yemen. Yemen was caught up in a civil war since 2015. I'm going to oversimplify this, but there was two major factions, a pro-government side that was pro-Saudi Arabia and an anti-government side that was anti-Saudi Arabia. When the anti-government side started winning, Saudi Arabia got the United States involved, and the United States started bombing the crap out of Yemen. Now, the raid that was conducted in Yemen was conducted on a group that was not focused on global jihad. They were focused on killing Houthis and Shiites, which major factions of do call for global jihad, and the United States does see as an enemy. So why is the United States involved in this dumb conflict that Saudi Arabia got us involved in? Why did Barack Obama frickin' start a bombing campaign inside of Yemen with horrible incidences? And this is just one where 35 women and children were killed by a U.S. cluster bomb. And again, we have seen the United States, the United Kingdom, continue to actively participate in Saudi Arabian war crimes, targeting Yemeni civilians, targeting impoverished Yemenis farms and agriculture industry, leaving a huge humanitarian crisis that is leaving millions at the risk of starvation. And after examining all this, I have to ask, all you people out there who are protesting Donald Trump at the airports right now, where the fuck were you when frickin' Barack Obama? Where the fuck were you when Barack Obama, with his dumb geopolitical freaking goals, backing Saudi Arabia, was bombing, sending drones, sending cluster bombs, butchering, murdering innocent women and civilians, causing millions of people to starve inside of Yemen? Where the fuck were you protesting him when he made that horrible decision? Where the fuck were you when Barack Obama was creating a disastrous human rights violating situation for dumb geopolitical goals, bombing, sending in drones, sending in cluster bombs, leaving millions of people to starve, creating immense human suffering to Yemen? Where the fuck were you with your protest signs at the White House? Because I didn't see anybody. We were calling it out here on this independent news channel, but you, the people, decided to neglect that, a very important fact. And if you compare the two, not allowing some Yemeni civilians to come into the United States versus what Barack Obama did, there's really no comparison. And this brings me to my bigger point, because if we look at Iraq, if we look at Libya, if we look at Syria, there was no major factions of Al-Qaeda, of ISIS, of radical Islamic terrorists until the United States decided to bomb and overthrow their leaders and make attempts to destabilize their government. And only because of those decisions were people radicalized after there was massive collateral damage, after there was massive corruption, after millions of dollars were shipped out in arms and shipments, and people inside of the Middle East decided to turn to radical Islamic factions. Of course, there's no justifying this in any way, shape, shape or form. But we have to understand this is a major factor to why people are pissed off and they're turning to radical Islamic terrorism. And if you truly wanted to stop, and if Donald Trump really wanted to end global radical Islamic terrorism, he would put George W. Bush, Barack Obama in jail for war crimes and not continue their failed foreign policy initiatives that are creating more terrorism. If you look at American foreign policy, there's a fire, radical Islamic terrorism. Their answer? Pour more gas on it. And that's exactly what we have seen exemplified to through world events through the past 16 freaking years. Debate me if I'm wrong on this. I know people are going to be in the comment section, but give him a try. It was just a mistake. No. This was a dumbass move that deserves to be called out, and he deserves to have no freaking support from the disastrous foreign policy that is creating more Islamic freaking terrorism against the people who are not even calling for global jihad. It's so freaking simple. Am I wrong? Debate me in this. And if this video resonated with you, please share it, because I believe this message needs to get out to everyone to fully understand the problems that we are facing. Now, we are here doing this, not shilling for Donald Trump like all these other supposed alternative media organizations that have simply just started to distort facts, started to manipulate information in order to push him and their faction and their tribal freaking gang side. We're not here to do that, because the truth matters. Matters more than anything else, matters more than partisanship, matters more than just your side, your gang color, your freaking Republican or Democrat or alt-right freaking label. Your labels don't matter. What matters is the truth, because once you have that, you could actually start solving the problems that we have in this world. And if you want more of this information, you have to vote with your dollar and support us on wearechange.org/donate. We're not left. We're not right. We're not Republican. We're not supported by any state. We're not supported by any corporation. We're supported and beholden to you, because you finance our operations independently through wearechange.org. Vote with your dollar. Support us if you like the message that we're getting out there. And we've been speaking this message for 16 years. We've been called all sorts of freaking things on the political spectrum. But ultimately, what we try to be is beholden to you. And most importantly, beholden to the freaking truth. Thank you again so much for watching. Subscribe. Stay tuned. We're going to have a lot more coming here your way on youtube.com/wearechange.
Meanwhile, I've also got one eye trained like a laser on the Brexit vote going on across the pond from the U.S. in London. After the people shocked the world, followed the Greeks, and voted to support Brexit, the United Kingdom High Court ruled that Parliament had to vote on the measure and authorize the Brexit negotiations with the European Union. Now, all of this is interesting, and I support Brexit, Grexit, Italeave, and all the other surges of sovereignty's good sense that have taken place in opposition to neoliberalism and the withering of democratic rights as practiced by the European Union. Nigel Farage has spoken at length about how democracy has suffered under the neoliberal European hand. And I might add that he too is now championing direct democracy. Well, this week, the UK Parliament authorized Prime Minister Theresa May to begin Brexit negotiations with Europe. Only thing, truly progressive Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn's closest ally, Diane Abbott, was missing in action, claiming that she, quote unquote, took ill and had to leave Parliament just before the vote. So she didn't vote. Now, of course, this is all interesting to me because I know Diane Abbott, having met her years ago. I also know Jeremy Corbyn. Well, probably even more importantly, Jeremy Corbyn knows me. Therefore, these are people who share my philosophy. And for Corbyn to win leader of Tony Blair's Labour Party is amazing. And the kind of regime change that, quite frankly, is needed by the Democratic Party here in the U.S. But being an MP, and more than that, being a leader, a shadow minister in the opposition, isn't a fur coat that you put on in the wintertime so you can look good. It comes with responsibility to take tough positions on tough issues. Brexit is a no-brainer for us, but I'm sure the lead up to the vote was as
unpleasant as the neoliberal pro-war globalists could make it, their tempest in a teapot. Nevertheless, I'm disappointed that on such an important vote, Diane Abbott, shadow home secretary, went MIA missing in action. Her fellow labor colleagues said she, quote, didn't have the balls to cast the vote for Brexit, sarcastically suggesting that she caught the Brexit flu. Despite Abbott's absence, the bill passed and Brexit is now officially underway. The UK is not in uncharted territory. It's just going back to a familiar position that it has played for centuries as influencer of European politics. And if the rest of the Europeans have their way, Grexit and the rest will soon follow. And Europe might just belong to the ordinary Europeans again, instead of to the globalizers bent on blackmailing or killing everyone in order to secure ownership of the world. Meanwhile, back in the U.S. and the United Nations, Trump's new ambassador, Nikki Haley, sounded more like President Obama's UN ambassador neocon Samantha Power when she blamed Russia for the current situation in Ukraine. A pitiful demonstration of just how out of touch and inciting to war an ambassador can be. Now, I'm told that the Obama bots are still in place, and they drove this policy because Tillerson had not yet taken the helm. But if that's the case, which it likely is, Haley didn't have to read the offensive blather prepared by them. And besides picking fights with Russia by intentionally distorting reality, the Trump administration continued the saber rattling of President Obama by making hostile statements also against China and Iran. With actions like these of last week, the sharp words against Russia over Ukraine, rustling the waters against China in the South China Sea, and extending new sanctions against Iran, it feels like the current boss is no different than the previous boss. Finally, I have to congratulate my hometown team, the Atlanta Falcons, for doing the unthinkable. Whoever would have thought they'd make the playoffs, let alone end up in the Super Bowl? My mother was an avid Falcon fan. From day one, she would be out there with like 12 other people at the stadium, right? Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, long time ago. But she boycotted the Falcons after the Tom Lantos Michael Vick affair. And if you're not familiar with that, you need to look it up. Find out who Tom Lantos is. And I'm sure many of you know about Michael Vick. Even though her love for the game wasn't dampened one bit. The new Falcon Stadium will be located downtown. A church built by slaves with an 1860s cornerstone was demolished as Atlanta taxpayers underwrote the dreams for a new football stadium of billionaire Arthur Blank, owner of the Atlanta Falcons. Seems George Soros can finance groups to march on Washington and stay in the streets for protests, reportedly paying up to $1,500 a month. But when it comes to telling his fellow billionaire Arthur Blank that Black lives matter when you preserve important sites of historical significance, well, sadly, it's clear. Black lives matter only when it suits the Soros agenda. But no life matters when it doesn't. It's so nice of Atlanta's Black community to allow their mayor to dedicate $200 million of their tax dollars for a football stadium that displaces important historic sites. In return, those who can't afford the tickets get a brand new state-of-the-art Mercedes football stadium to revel in. The community a not so prosperous historic black community whose faces, by and large, won't be inside that stadium, gets a quote unquote prosperity fund in the amount of $15 million, not from their tax dollars, but from the Blank Family Foundation to improve the quality of life for the affected communities, quote unquote, where practical. This is the language that's actually in the agreement, where practical. And Arthur Blank gets a 6,300-acre ranch in Montana to enlarge and complement the Montana ranch that he already owns, the Mountain Sky Guest Ranch, which he bought in 2001. And I bet I won't see many community faces there either. Now that's some kind of deal.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you've been listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
No, I ain't lying. You know I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, daddy. I can't stand it because you put me down. Yeah, yeah. Spell on you.